Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2011. Lecture 21, delivered on November 14, 2011. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 2.
Today, review for Exam 2. The format of the exam is identical to the format of Exam 1. There will be a multiple choice section, multiple guess for some of you. There will be then a workout section, and then short answers. One of the questions will be up on the blackboard later this evening. Work it out, get your answers, and you can bring them with you on your note card for the exam. It will be the marginal cost of capital question. Be careful with it. Don't just attack the question, read it. Especially the where you can get your problem is whether I'm giving you the current dividend or the dividend one period out. Always watch out which is it that I am giving you, because it's crucial to the one formula. Yeah. Yeah, it's the question. It is the question. There is no change. The one thing, though, is that on the test, I will not ask you to show me the graph. But you would want to do the graph, obviously, to get the projects that would be accepted and the projects that would be rejected. And in this one will be a little more realistic than the one that I gave you, that one you did for the quiz, just because the projects will be named. On this one, it will actually be one that was drawn. It's a slightly simplified version of an actual real estate. Trying to think which one I did. I think it's a real estate question, projects that a real estate developer did. It's either that, or it was one that was from a company that was trying to figure out whether it should do transport, what kind of transport projects it should take on. It was a global distribution company, but. When I say what projects will be accepted, you tell me names of projects, because this one won't be Project A, Project B. You tell me this, the Terraline project or the Four Winds project will be accepted. Give me the names and all that kind of stuff. It's, like I said, it's a little more realistic. Now let me go through the grinder on this meatloaf, give you the questions, kinds of questions I'll be asking. Multiple choice. If you notice there were these pockets in the class, in this section of the class, in this part of the course, where I gave you a lot of terminology. For example, in agency, in contracts, and also just generally there were these terms and concepts that were showing up through this part of the course. As a matter of fact, at one point, I talked about going public and the forms that you would use if you were going public by various routes and all of that. So there, I threw out terminology like red herring, tombstone, registration on form S-1, 8K, 10K, all those kinds of terms. So you would want to know those. Make sure you know that terminology. Also, there was terminology with agency, more than a few terms. Everything from fiduciary duty to agency, what's agent, broker, dealer, agent versus principal, agency costs of various kinds. So there was terminology there. Make sure that you go through. It might not hurt, and it depends on your studying and learning style, just to try to pick out the terms that are in your notes and get them in a list and make sure you have down what terms mean what, because they're not only useful for the multiple choice, but also for the short essays at the end. Now, as far as multiple choice goes, there will be terminology questions. Well, what does this mean? All that. There will also be conceptual material. For example, I might say, well, the MCC graph blank and the iOS graph blank. So you rise, fall. So in other words, you'd have to know which way the MCC graph goes, which way the iOS graph goes. In the multiple choice section is where I would probably ask you to do a simple break-even question. I mean, they're real no-brainers. All you have to know is the fixed cost, the unit price, and the unit variable cost. You got your break-even. But that's probably where I would do a question like that. I would also, in the multiple choice, possibly ask you for a simple present value kind of question, or a net present value kind of question, and an internal rate of return kind of question. Give you a cash flow, nothing terribly complicated, but it would be a cash flow. Okay, which of the following is closest to the net present value? Which of the following is closest to the internal rate of return kind of question? Those would be in multiple choice. Also in the multiple choice, I would be asking you to show me some basic understandings of bond prices. If the yield is above the price of the bond, I'm sorry, if the yield is larger than the coupon, then the bond would sell at a discount to par, a premium to par, would sell at par, that kind of thing. And there might be a little overlap there. I would also, in that section where the formulas are easy, I'd say, well, here's preferred stock. Okay, use this discount rate. What's the price of the preferred stock? Remember, you use that present value of a perpetuity. So, and then I'd say, which of the following is the right? I might give you a multiple choice question where I give you four different formulas. Which is the formula you would use for this kind of a problem? Not don't figure out a problem, but just tell me which one of the formulas I give you. Would be the one you would use for this kind of a problem. Those are the kinds of things. Let me look. Hang on here. Let me look at my. Would you like me to put the exam up on the overhead for a minute? Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Go ahead. No. Now, I'll go back over this. Some of these will be more basic conceptual versions of what would be in the workout or the essays, but I could ask you something conceptual about degrees of leverage. Okay, you've gotten rid of you've paid off all your bonds, but your degree of combined leverage is skyrocketing. Why would that happen? I asked that. Oh my God. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a pretty wide swath of what I would. A few other terms that I might throw out. Some of this was a little bit, it crosses back into the early, and then I came back around to it, like market cap. What does that mean? What's a market cap? Things like ratings of bonds. Nothing, I wouldn't ask you for a detail. Well, what is a AAA plus or something like that? But yeah, that's enough about multiple choice. Now, the part two. I'm going to start off with a bond question. I'm going to have you find the price of a bond, the yield of a bond on a bond, and then something else related to that, a three-part question. And so you just, that's a calculator problem. You will get the full credit, remember, by using semi-annual calculations and quote number, not the dollar number. If I'll give you a quote number, I expect you to report to me a quote number, not the actual dollar value. Remember that the quotes are at a tenth of the actual price. So you want to give me the quotes, the answers as a quote. Don't give it to me as a price. I'm going to have you, in the next problem, I'm going to have you give me find the price of a share of stock. Remember, to do that, you're going to need to know the discount rate to use. I'm going to have you find the discount rate using the capital asset pricing model. So you'll have to find the discount rate, then apply it to the appropriate formula. Now remember that formula is D1 over K minus G. D1, not D0. So watch it. I might give you D1, but I also might give you D0 and you'd have to grow it a period. So keep an eye on which way I'm asking it, how I word the question to find me the price of the share of stock. So you're going to have to find a price of a share of stock, D1 over K minus G, that thing, and you'll find the K by the capital asset pricing model. So it's a two-part. You're going to have to find two different things in that problem. And as I've said before, there's not a whole lot of partial credit, because if you make a mistake in the real world, very few people are going to give you partial credit for wiping out their pension fund with a wrong answer. I'm going to have you calculate degrees of leverage. I'm going to give you 2 years of financial statement, 2 years of income statements, and you're going to have to find the degrees of leverage. And you remember the formulas for that. DOL is percent change in EBIT over percent change in sales. And then the DFL is a percent change in net income. Percent change in net income over the percent change in EBIT. And the DCL is a percent change in sales. No, the net income, percent change in net income over the percent change in sales. So in other words, the first thing you need to do to get the problem done is to get these three formulas worked out for the problem. The percent change in sales, the percent change in EBIT, and the percent change in net income. Now, I'll just give you 2 years of financial statements, very simplified financial statements. You just show me you know how to get DOL, DFL, and DCL. I'll go back through and maybe do a workout question if we have the time. And then your marginal cost of capital question. And that'll be your workout section of the exam. Okay, now, the essay questions, they're just like the last time. One sentence, grammatically complete, with correct spelling, the whole nine yards. You're not texting me. You're using full words, no plus symbols for and all that kind of stuff. You give me a complete one-sentence answer, say what you have to say, and walk away from the question. There are five of them. You choose four to answer. And I'll give you some possibilities. Not that any of them will be on the exam. but some of them will be on the exam. Not all of them. I'm going to throw maybe, I'll try to throw 10 at you. 3 or 4 of them would be what would be on the exam. What is the relationship between the price of a bond and the time to maturity? Now, you be careful of this answer. You give me a general answer. What does the price do as the bond approaches maturity? Don't tell me, if it's at a premium, well, if it's at a discount. Tell me the very complete answer. What does the price of a bond do as the bond approaches the time to maturity? Distinguish among a broker, a dealer, and an agent. State the agency dilemma. What is fiduciary duty? And how is that different from normal agency duty? What is fiduciary duty, and how is that different from agency duty? From normal agency duty. What are the agency costs? Explain each briefly. What does it mean for a company to go public? What's the relationship between the marginal cost of capital and the weighted average cost of capital? What is meant by optimal capital structure? What is meant by optimal capital structure? What is meant by a junk bond? For the love of God, kill it, woman. Give me a second here. Bear with me. Why is net present value preferable to internal rate of return for decision making? In other words, what is the flaw in internal rate of return that could cause problems? What is the flaw? Let me put it this way. What is the flaw in internal rate of return that could make it not useful for project decision making? This one I was thinking of. What was one I was thinking of? Why are firms not 100% debt, even though debt is cheaper than equity, as a general rule? Why are firms not 100% debt, even though debt is cheaper than equity? That's enough. No, what is the relationship between the marginal cost of capital and the weighted average cost of capital? Now, to make sure absolutely sure that you know how to do these. I'm going to write just a couple of problems. I want you to get answers while we're here together as a happy family. Rather large family for Thanksgiving, but what the hell. A 5.60 BCA 26 yielding 5.82%, find its price. And then quote, just quote me on the bond. So again, a 5.60 BCA 26 yielding 5.82%, quote me the bond. And assume that it's exactly the number of years. Talk to me. If you can do this in less than a minute, you are in good shape. Yeah.
97.84.
What the hell? How did you do that so fast? Okay, wait. Will you let me get the dang... Wait. 97.84, is that what you said? Well, we'll see. Apps. Okay, so it's a 30... And we go down here to, back 5.82, go down, 5.82, divided by 2, and go down, and the, quote, the payment is 56 divided by 2, and then... We got 1,000, and so alpha solve. I'll be darned if you're not right. What'd you get? Quote this bond at 97.82. Quote that bond at 97.82. If you can get it done in less than a minute, you are in great shape going into the exam on the bond question.
Did you say you
wanted to
quote
it? I want to quote it. No, it's 97.82.
All right.
Yeah, 97.82. Don't give me the dollars. If I ask for the quote, you get the quote back to me. Now... Why is this price below 100? Why is the price below 100? Can you tell me that? Because I might very well ask that. Why is the price below 100? Talk to me. What's the market say this bond should pay? What does the bond actually pay? So in other words, the market is going to spank this bond. It's going to say, you're not worth your par value. The coupon is below what the market says it should be based upon the risk of the firm currently. So there you are. This bond will sell at a discount to par. Now we're going to do another one. You find a yield for me. A 7.40 TXX 46. And the price, the quote right now, is 101.65. It's a 7.40 TXX 46 priced at 101.65. What's the yield? to maturity on this bond. At 35 times 2, we drop down. We need to find the yield, so we're going to put in the quote at negative 1016.5, and we're going to drop down to the payment, which would be 74 divided by 2, and then we make sure that the future value is at 1,000. Make sure that present value is a negative number, and then we're going to calculate the I percent. Go back up to I percent alpha solve. Now, that is half of the right answer, so you're going to multiply that by 2, and you're going to get a yield of 7.27%. The yield you should get is 7.27%. You're going to put in it, okay, I'm going to throw it back at you. How many years are there? How many years are there to maturity? 35. It's 2011. 2046 is 35 years in the future. So you go to the end and you say 35 times 2. Leave the I percent alone because you're going to go back to that. Now you're going to drop down to the PV. Yeah, the price value. Make sure you always put in the PV as a negative number. It's just that's the way you do it. And the PV that you'll put in, so you're going to have the N is going to be 35 times 2. Leave the I percent alone. And then you're going to put in your price value, which will be negative 1016.5. Zero. Remember that it's a negative and you have to put it in as a price. The calculator doesn't want the quote thing. And then your PMT, this bond is going to pay $76 per year. $74 per year. Okay. So you're going to put in there $74 divided by 2 because it'll be broken up into two payments. Make sure your FV is 1,000, and make sure at the bottom, I should have pointed this out before, that thing at the bottom, end, begin, is always on end for bonds. And then you toggle back up here, alpha solve to the I percent, but what it's going to give you is half of the right answer. It's going to spit out the answer, then you just take the calculator's cursor over and hit times 2, and it'll give you the final answer. Yeah, because remember when you had the yield, you divided by 2? So it's going to give you a yield that's half a year, because you gave it half a year information. So you times it by 2 to get it back to where you want it. So there you are. If you can do those, you will have no problem. Yeah?
Okay, the 46 comes from 46 minus 2011. That, I mean, the 35 comes from.
Yeah.
And then you multiply that.
Yeah, just do it perfect years. I mean, you can get really fancy down to the day or the minute or the hour or whatever, which actually they do with the quoting systems now to get the yield. But, I mean, that's just getting silly. Now, that would be two of the three parts of the bond question, is just those. Notice, by the way, that this bond was selling at a premium to par. It was selling at above 100. You see, the price was above $1,000. It was selling at a premium to par, and as it turned out, that was because the market said this bond should pay a coupon of 7.26%, something like that, 7.27%. The bond was paying more than that. So the market's going to reward the bond, say, oh, you're worth more than $1,000 because your coupon is great. So that's that. And then I'll ask you something else, too. I might say, well, what happens if the, I might say, what happens in part A or in part B if the coupon is paid in quarterly payments instead of annual semi-annual payments. I might do it that way. And there you just do 4 instead of 2. You just do everything the same except 4 instead of 2. I'm now finding out that there are bonds that are even monthly. The coupon comes on a monthly basis and all that kind of stuff. So that's bonds. Nothing hard about them. It's just a calculator. The bad part, though, is that, of course, there's almost no partial credit. You either get it or you don't get it, which is the way it's appropriate for the real world. You either get the answer right or you have lots of people suing you back to the Stone Age, and they're not going to take, well, you almost got the answer right. Now, I want to go through just quickly. These are actually pretty easy questions. Just want to make sure that you can get the formula. Don't make mistakes in the formula because, like I said, there's not a whole lot of partial credit here. So if I wanted to do degrees of leverage kind of problem, let me take 2010, 2009 sales less expenses brings us to EBIT, and then we're going to take out the interest, brings us to EBT less taxes at 25%. We'll just do it for this problem, and that'll take us to net income. And the sales for 2010 were $80,000. Sales rose to $92,000. Sales rose to $80,000 in 2010 from $72,000 in 2009 on expenses of $32,000. And those expenses rose from $26,000, brings us to EBIT in 2010 of $48,000, up from EBIT in 2009 of $46,000. Is that right?
Yes.
Interest expense is $10,000 in both years, bringing us to EBT of $38,000 for 2010 from $36,000 in 2009. 25% of $38,000. Clear 0.25 times 38. Yeah, what was that?
9,500.
Yeah, 9,500. And 36,000 would be 9,000. And so we would have 005, 17 minus 9 is 8, 28,500 net income in 2010. Up from 27,000 in 2009. This is just a kind of a throwaway problem. It won't be much worse on the exam. Obviously, I'll just give you the numbers. Now, what you need to do to be able to crank this problem out is get your percent changes. Your percent change in sales is going to be, remember, a percent change is always your percent change in sales will be your ending value, which is $80,000 less $72,000 over your beginning value, $72,000 in this case. So your percent change in sales. Do these three first because it's going to make your life a lot easier to get the problem done. Your percent change in sales are going to be $8,000 over $72,000, which should be 11%. I think. Yep, 11.11%. Now carry at least two decimal places as a percent as you're going down. Otherwise, you're going to get some explosive rounding error that you don't want. Your percent change in EBIT is going to be your ending EBIT, 48 grand, less your beginning, 46 grand, over your beginning, 46 grand. So it's going to be 2,000 divided by 46,000. And that's going to be 4.35%. And again, I remind you, all answers, two decimal places. If it's a percentage, two decimal places as the percentage. And your net income, we got 28,500 less 27,000 over 27,000, which means that you've got 1,500 divided by 27,000 is 5.56%. Is that right? Huh. Well, spank me, Jesus. Okay. DOL. Percent change in EBIT, which is 4.35%, over the percent change in sales, which is 11.11%. So your degree of operating leverage, something's wrong here. Something sucks. Tell me where I wrote something wrong. Percent change in net income. Percent change in net income, 28.5 minus 27. Yeah, over 27. Where did I write, or is this just going to come out to be a really weird-ass thing? Huh. Whoa. It's right, it looks like. 8,000. Yeah, percent change in EBIT. Ah, percent change in EBIT. Yeah, it's going to be right. It's just weird. I wanted it to come out to be a little bit more interesting, but it's not going to. So 4.35% divided by 11.11%. 4.35 divided by 11.11 is 39.15. 0.3915 degree of financial leverage. Yeah, I made this really, really too simple. It's so simple it's actually coming out to be, the numbers are just going to look a little strange, but there you are. So degree of financial leverage is percent change in net income, 5.56%. For a percent change in EBIT, 4.35%. 5.56 divided by 4.35 is 1.28 times. And then the degree of combined leverage, DCL, is going to be percent change in net income, which is 5.56%, over percent change in sales, which is 11.11%. And so
5.56 divided by 11.11 is 5.0.
times. Ha! Well, that's kind of an oddball thing. Just to quickly check, DOL times DFL should be DCL. Now, there'll be some rounding error in here. So we should have 0.39 times 1.28 should be approximately 0.50.
0.39 times 1.28.
Sort of, yeah, close. And there will be some rounding error because I rounded everything to two decimal places. So this is actually kind of an oddball thing, and it can happen. What happened was that your net income actually is only half of the magnification of volatility. So your volatility actually goes down in this case as you grow, rather as sales change. Now, notice, however, that it works like any other one. What's causing the magnification? There actually isn't that much. But what's creating the magnification here is your financial leverage. Interestingly enough, your operating leverage is actually demagnifying sales volatility down to the net income line. In other words, this company is actually almost pure variable cost. It's got almost no fixed cost whatsoever, which is indicative that this would probably be something more like possibly a service company of some kind, perhaps some kind of an internet company that doesn't have any brick and mortar operations whatsoever. This company's actually, its lack of fixed costs is translating into the magnification being less than one. If you were to guess, and it would be a relatively rough guess, would this company have a high beta or a low beta? Talk to me. Low. This would have a low beta because sales volatility is being dampened at the net income line. So even in an economy where there's a lot of whipsaw up and down, this company's net income would not whipsaw up and down at all. See how if you got a dollar change in sales, that translates only half of that to a change in net income. So this is a company that would actually be a safer kind of volatility-wise. We can't tell, though. Beta can be can fool you because the total volatility has a part that is not market-related. And therefore, you can't beta is not going to measure that part or lack thereof in a company. Now, that would be that's just a really basic, straightforward, but it'll be just like that on the exam. Not the same numbers, but that's all I'm going to ask you to do is get this down for me and then possibly answer a question about what's causing the volatility in net income. How would they stop that volatility? How would they reduce it? Or is this a fairly well-balanced kind of volatility environment from sales down to net income? Now it's your turn. I want you to ask me questions. If it's going to be on the exam, I'll say, yeah. If it's not on the exam, I'm going to say no. No, that won't be on the exam. Yeah.
Is that the extent of what we're
going to
see as far as bonds?
Remember there will be some multiple choice questions that will be related to bonds too, and in the essay. So this is where you actually do the raw calculation. All you have to do is show me I can price a bond, and then you can get a job on Wall Street. Yeah, but also I should also caution, I might ask you to give me one of the answers again if it's quarterly instead of semi-annual payment, something along that line. Where the hell did I put my coffee? It's clear over there. Okay, what else? Other questions for it?
I did break even. I died.
Yeah.
How
the only thing would be, well, what would happen is if I gave you the dividend, the current dividend, you have to grow that one period. In other words, if I said, okay, the dividend per share is $5 and we expect growth for the foreseeable future of 10%, you would use in the formula $5.50 because it'd be 5 times 1 plus 0.10. Do you follow that? So you would want to make sure, did I say the dividend they just paid, or would it be they are planning to pay in 1 year? If it's in 1 year, then that would be D1, don't do anything. But if I gave you they have just paid, then you have to multiply. And remember, if I give you net income, then you have to take out that dividend. Now, it's actually, there's a little turbulence in there. Technically, if I'm giving you next year's dividend, but I'm giving you the current year's net income for them to spend, you should ratchet it back the dividend a period, but don't do that. Just make it easier. Okay, they're paying this dividend. Take it out of the income. Take it out of net income. Okay? But, yeah, you need to use the D1. That's where you can fall down, because if you use the wrong D1, if you use the wrong number for D1, then the whole problem falls apart and everything is wrong from there on out, pretty much. And don't forget to take the dividend out of net income before you calculate the break point. While I'm thinking about it, I'll probably ask you for the relationship between the number of break points and the number of tiers of capital. So if I told you that the debt jumps once, they can sell common stock and they can sell preferred stock, how many breakpoints would there be? Talk to me. Okay. How many breakpoints have there been when they had one jump in the debt and then they had stock as well that they could sell? There were two breakpoints. So what happens if there's one jump in the debt, they can sell common stock and they can sell preferred stock? How many breakpoints would there be? 3. Good. Now, one last thing. How many tiers of marginal cost of capital are there if there are 3 breakpoints? Again, remember the MCC graph? It goes up, up, up. How many, if there are 3 breakpoints, how many tiers of marginal cost of capital are there? Visualize it. Yes, 4. Because if there are 3 poles, then there'd be 1, jump 2, jump 3, jump 4. There'd be 4 tiers of marginal cost of capital. Okay? So remember that. Hint, hint, for multiple choice. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Okay? So that's something you have to keep in mind, because the breakpoints are related to how many tiers of marginal cost of capital that there will be on a company. Also, again, I'm not going to tell you this one, but you need to remember, I said something and I said it, just tossed it out. I said there's something, a relationship between the weighted average cost of capital and the marginal cost of capital. When you do those calculation problems, there's a relationship in there. And you should know what the relationship is between the weighted average cost of capital and the marginal cost of capital. I mentioned it just in passing. It's also in the book, in the textbook, in the chapter on marginal cost of capital. There's a relationship between weighted average cost of capital and marginal cost of capital. It's actually very simple, but you should know that. If you know it, it's a very quick question on the exam, possibly even in the essay questions, where you could answer it in about six words and get yourself 5 points, so you would not go home empty-handed. It is. It really is. Okay? And I think about it. 5 points on an exam from me, I mean, you can take that home, you'll get better Christmas presents. Mom will be impressed. What else do you have to ask me? Anything else? Look, it'll, yeah, go ahead. Okay, the ones that it was the last back half of chapter 8. And then there were a couple of chapters I don't do. Business valuation and incremental cash flow. And then it's up to, I think it was chapter 14, I think I told someone, I don't have the book, I didn't bring the book, I was carrying so many things today. But it's up through the MCC, and then there were those, remember the special lecture that is not in the book, the agency cost lecture, and also the part I did on contracts. But you've got the PowerPoints to do for those, the PowerPoint presentation. So again, we started in the last part of chapter 8. That was the time value of money chapter. And then I don't do incremental cash flow or business valuation, but then we pick it up with capital budgeting, and then we finish it up with the chapter on bonds, stock, and leasing. And I don't do leasing in this course. Not for this one, for the final, yes. But I do make sure you do go through that PowerPoint on agency. Is that available? Can you find that? Okay, I do apologize. These things, I don't get them to show, and so I'll have to find that and make sure that I can get that up tonight too. Okay? And no, don't send me an email. I've just got a couple of questions about that problem that you are going to put on the exam. Don't do that. What's the answer to it? No. But that'll be up tonight late on Blackboard. That's all I have for you. I thank you.